back to the Geek Whisperers. I'm Amy Lewis.
And I'm John Mark Troyer.
And I'm Matt Brender.
And we are back with another inspiring episode of the Geek Whisperers. This week, we have longtime friend of the podcast, and technically, a lot of people think my relative because he's a fellow ginger, Josh Atwell. Josh, introduce yourself for people who don't recognize the man behind the beard.
Thanks, Amy, and thanks, everybody, for having me on this show. My name is Josh Atwell. I'm a cloud architect for SolidFire, which is a great way of saying that I get to play with cool stuff and figure out how it works and then tell people how I got it to work. So I focus primarily on integrations with automation tools and frameworks.
Very cool. So is that what you always wanted to do when you grew up?
Well, you know, as a fellow podcaster, I have to say that's a great lead into, I think, what we're going to talk about today. It is not what I thought I was going to be doing.
Were you going to be an astronaut?
Yes, actually, that was exactly what my intent was going to be. I did start out wanting to be an astronaut. In fact, I went to NC State University and got a degree in aerospace engineering and decided my second senior year that I didn't want to work in the aerospace industry, and I didn't like the way the path looked to get me to an astronaut. So I made some various decisions that took me to where I am today.
Which I'm going to jump in here. Normally we don't unveil our top secret formula here on the podcast, which is we have the rule of three here. We usually come in with a kind of an idea of our title and the three topics. But one of the interesting points Josh brought to us is that though he is by no means the elder statesman we've ever had on here, he's one of our younger career path guests. He has, as you just heard him say, he's always had that long-term vision. So we're going to talk about agile career development. And our three topics here are picking your goals, choosing your path, and navigating your path. And the reason I'm unveiling the big reveal first is, you know, Josh has an endpoint he wants to get to. So some of what's really interesting here, I think, is you know where you're going. It's figuring out how to get there. That's been your career focus more than some folks don't know where they're going to land. And it's all about the journey. You really are goal-oriented, destination-oriented.
I decided, actually, I think I was watching a movie one time and that somebody had won the lottery and, that, you know, essentially everything went downhill from there. So I had decided at some point, I said, you know, if I ever win the lottery, what do I want to do with my time? Because I'm not one to be able to sit idle. And that's kind of how it all started. You know, I decided not to do aerospace and I needed to figure out what I was going to do. And that kind of inspired me. So I started simply by figuring out how I thought I would want to spend my retirement years and my years after working full time.
So where were you at that time, Josh, just so that we can continue to frame this out? So you're a geek that wanted to go to space, and then you realize basically no one goes to space. They just go and work in a factory or something like that.
Geeks in space!
So right. you took the sysadministration pathway that many of us choose to, or you were involved in tech in some way, I imagine?
Not at first, no. When I graduated, you know, I was looking for work, and I had some other issues. I got married immediately after graduating to my lovely and wonderful wife.
I hope she's not listening right now, because that was...
No, let me finish. So her being a teacher... she had received a scholarship from the state of North Carolina that required her to teach in North Carolina for 4 years or pay back an exorbitant amount of money. So it limited my job searching for the most part to North Carolina, primarily because there was just no way that we were going to be able to on the salaries that were going to be available to a teacher and myself to foot the kind of bill that she was going to have. So that's what I mean by that. So naturally I decided to sell cell phones because that's what I had done during college. That's actually how we had met. And one day somebody sent me an instant message asking if I was still looking for a job. Of course I replied yes. He said, would you like mine? Maybe. Why don't you want it? And it turns out that he was doing desktop and sysadmin support and he was finishing his master's doing, you know, computer science and hardware design, and he got a new job. So I went in, I interviewed. They asked me, you know, what would you do if somebody's laptop wasn't working right and it needed to be reformatted? I said, back it up. They said, you're hired. So
that was the secret question, the secret answer?
That was the, I think, the first screening question. You know, I had done some IT during high school, working for the school system, and I had done, you know, helped up set up their first network, their first Windows domain, a lot of wiring, setting up computer labs and things like that. So, you know, I wasn't completely new to computers. You know, I had an aptitude for it already, but this was the first time that I decided that I was going to, you know, make a job and then later a career out of it.
First, I say it's refreshing hearing the story about how the practical elements of how you, yes, possibilities and endless, but you sort of set some practical things based on still like shared goals that you and your family had in terms of where you wanted to get to. So give us some practical advice. If folks tend to be a little more improv or have trouble kind of accessing ideas about what they want to do, how did you get there? How do you set those goals and then make that happen?
That's pretty straightforward. You just have to be really honest and introspective, which is really, really difficult for people. I think it's, you know, I have this conversation with people frequently about, you know, I'm not sure what to do next. You know, I've been in this job for a while and I'm not sure where to progress from here. And, you know, for me, I'm always regularly questioning what I enjoy doing. And, you know, and I take that, and I have essentially two columns. You know, I have what I like to do and what I really want to do. And then I have my requirements. Like, I have to provide for my family. I have to make X amount of money in order to maintain our standard of living. I need to, you know, maintain proximity to an airport, you know, really practical things. Right. And I take those into consideration. And then as opportunities present themselves or I go seeking opportunities, I look at these things that I feel like I really want to have. I identify things that I really want to avoid, and I'm very honest about that. And, you know, I'm saying I don't want to be involved with this. And I try to weigh out the job and look at it to see if it fits that. The second part of that, you know, and I alluded to it earlier, is I have sat down and decided, like, if I were to retire today, you know, after I get past the immediate excitement and the whirlwind tour of, you know, yay, I've got all this money, you know, how would I spend the next 30, 40, 50 years of my life, hopefully more, how would I want to spend that time? And what I did is I went totally analog, right? I got some index cards and some Sharpies, and I wrote on it, I want to have a hobby, and I think that hobby would be great to be a science fiction author. I like writing science fiction. I haven't finished a single project yet, but I enjoy it. I'd like to, you know, use my voice, maybe be an audiobook narrator or, you know, some narrator of some type. And if I wanted to stay in technology, I'd like to be a consultant working globally where I could, you know, travel, you know, work 50% of the time, travel 50% of the time in the region and live in the region and work as a consultant in different areas of the world.
I just have to stop you here because first I have to commend you for your imagination. In all seriousness, I think so many of us, when we go to brainstorm what makes us happy or what we want to do, we get caught in super blinders on, you know, what are some practical tips? I love the index cards. I have this sense that there's an Excel spreadsheet lurking in your life somewhere.
Nope. I just would like to say that I did none of this. So this is very, it's just weird.
Yeah.
Well, how do you get unstuck? Like, I can absolutely be a victim of having those blinders on and not seeing, you know, a path in front of me. How do you brainstorm? How do you, in the midst of all the busy life you're living, how do you access that to think about, you know, your 20, 30, or 40 year plan?
seriously, index cards. It's completely analog, no Excel. And, you know, it sounds kind of silly. And, you know, when I explain this, it sounds a bit, you know, like I'm going off the deep end and getting really philosophical about it. But physically writing it down, holding it in your hand, and being able to arrange it in a manner that helps you, you know, mind map, you know, your career and what you want to do, it just there's a comfort to it, at least for me, that says, you know what, if I decide that this one is just terrible and this no longer applies, I just rip the card up. And guess what? It's gone. It's no longer, you know, something that I'm going to think about or have involved. And, you know, so that is what really works for me. And then every now and then, you know, because the biggest thing that I had challenges with previously is typically I have no idea what opportunities are out there, right? I have absolutely no idea. I know that someday I anticipate that I will lead a company, whether it be a CEO, CTO, or something like that. I have a lot of characteristics that I think lead me to want to do that type of work. But I also know that there's five different paths to get me there, right? So instead of focusing on, you know, well, I'm going to go and, you know, I'm going to become an architect, and then I'm going to become a manager, and then a director, and then a VP, and then a president. That's one possibility. What I really do is say, okay, if I look at CTOs and CEOs that impress me and things like that, you know, what is it about them, right? Like, you look at someone like Elon Musk. Like, what is it about Elon Musk that just really says, I really want to be like that guy? Well, take those things, write it down on a card, and add it to your skills tree of things that you should probably work on and improve upon, because those are the things that probably got him where he is, right? And I say that because by doing that, I've been approached with opportunities that I never knew would have been a possibility, because somebody recognized that has specific skills that would translate into a role that in many cases accelerated me on my journey. So the index cards is really key for me in having that, like, physical thing. I move it around and write it down and make it real.
Well, hey, Josh, had you started this method at the early part of your career? Because I'm kind of curious. We left you – when we last left our hero, he was working, you know, in IT. I had just gotten started in IT in a support role. And you grew in that role, and eventually you moved over onto the vendor side, which is kind of a big watershed moment for a lot of career IT careers that I've seen. When you moved over there, were you already doing this kind of mapping technique, or did an opportunity just present itself?
That was actually the point in time where I started to kind of start with this technique and try to figure out, like, because I was sitting there, you know, I had been doing tech support for a small engineering firm for 5 years, and I had hit the point where I was pretty miserable. I had an opportunity to move to a virtualization engineering role in a larger company, but I hit a point where I had outpaced my work, right? I had automated so much and, you know, done a really good job that I kind of ran out of projects. Then I went to Cisco and did IT, and then after 2 years at Cisco and IT, you're like, well, there's not much bigger than Cisco IT, right? There is bigger, right? But there's going to be similar types of problems. Like, there's, you know, from a support standpoint, there's not really a bigger challenge that I'm likely to face without considerable effort and headache. So that was the point where I said, all right, I need to sit down, think about the things that I love doing, the things that I don't love doing, where I want to take my family and what I want to provide for my family. And, you know, because money's a part of it. We don't do this for free unless we win the lottery and we choose to. But, you know, I that's when I really started weighing the pros and cons. And I didn't take the shift lightly, because not only did I go to the vendor side, but I went into sales, you know, and pre-sales.
You're not. Hey,
it's true.
Yeah. If I can still monopolize the questions, Amy, so, Josh, I had forgotten that you were in IT at Cisco. Mm-hmm. There's a love-hate relationship between software vendors and their own internal IT departments. In some ways, you should be respected because you're the closest thing to a customer that most internal staffers actually talk to. But mm-hmm. on the other hand, you're a support organization. How did you find that at all weird or Was there any was that tension that I just proclaimed actually present in your Cisco experience?
Yes, there is definitely some tension. I'll say it this way: the people that I worked with within Cisco are, you know, the top of the top. Unfortunately, because they're the top of the top, I think the expectations are very, very high because the needs are very, very high and the demands are very, very high. And so when, you know, something like some software is being developed, and I'm not going to bash on Nexus 1000V, but it had some trouble early on and we had some challenges with it. And, you know, implementing in some situations, we'd come across things that, you know, you have the moments where you're like, you know, I really wish I could just go back to a regular distributed virtual switch. So, you know, there was certainly those tensions there. But one of the things that really comes out of it, and I think, you know, talks to the point that you were making, is because we ended up working so closely with the BU, we were able to give very, very good feedback. We were very, very close to them, and we became a very, you know, close communication. That was definitely challenging, but I will say that it helped me a lot in moving into that transition, because one of the last projects I worked on was working with Splunk and implementing it at Cisco for internal IT. The security team was already using it. We're longtime users and were a huge help to me, but I was actually able to start using Splunk and getting it implemented, and that kind of got me thinking about product and how to roll it out and how users use it and how to make things accessible. You know, and I took the experience from working with the Cisco BUs, and I took, you know, what I was learning there. So, you know, it definitely helped roll into me moving forward in my career, which was something I hadn't expected, right? Because I had developed skills that I didn't realize were transferable. And that's when I really started hitting my framework and saying, okay, well, what skills have I learned? Well, I'm a really good project lead on, you know, like something like implementing a software package or whatever. I give really good feedback on usability and things like that. And I started listing some of this stuff out, and I worked towards figuring out, like, okay, how do I market that? How do I let people know that I have that to see what kind of jobs might be available?
Interesting. Well, I'm going to dig into a little bit more of what you just covered, Josh, that you said the Splunk project. So you had this kind of breakaway project where you got to differentiate yourself. Number one, in that moment, did you know that was a breakaway moment? And either way, yes or no, when you figured it out, what did you do with that? Like, what made you really run away with it if you had an aha moment along the way?
So I did recognize that it was going to, you know, once I started getting traction and having people interested in, you know, what I was doing and, you know, asking about timelines and how they could get involved, I did realize that I was getting into something and leading something that was going to be really important. I think the biggest aha moment was when I started having people volunteer their time to me to help me get into the path, you know, get farther down the path. Granted, it was worthwhile to them because it helped them get closer to them being able to use it and things like that. But before long, I had like a dozen people that were attending my weekly status meetings. Whereas at first it was me and one other guy who, Paul, he was awesome. But, you know, it started out just me and one other guy. And as some, stakeholders started, you know, coming to play, I started getting more and more resources and, you know, they were helping execute my vision. And that was kind of the moment where I'm like, I really enjoy doing this. I need to figure out how to do this for a living, you know, beyond Cisco at some point, or at least Cisco IT.
So I have another question. As we talk about, you know, we talked a little bit about picking your goals, using the index cards, about choosing your path. What do you do? What's your advice for people? And maybe this has never happened to you, but because you're so long-term goal-oriented, if you feel yourself veering off the path, how do you recognize it and how do you get yourself back on?
So the way I tackle that, because I've had moments where I was concerned that I had veered off path. You know, my last job was kind of that, right? I realized that I pre-sales out in the field was not quite what I wanted to do. So what I did was I went back to my skills matrix, if you will, you know, all my skills cards, and said, you know, all right, these are the skills. This is what I want to do. This is the type of work I enjoy doing. And it, at that point, it became, this is the type of work I miss doing. Like, I realized that I wasn't getting hands-on with technology anymore. So one of my top priorities for a new job was I need to be hands-on at least, you know, 25% of the time, right? I recognized that I didn't want to be in the lab with hands-on technology 100% of the time. So, you know, it was going back to my skills and getting back to the way I wanted to spend my time in order to earn a living, and the things that really made the job fulfilling for me. Because I worked in a job that I felt miserable in, and that just wasn't good. It wasn't good for my life. It wasn't good for my health. It wasn't good for my marriage. And, you know, I wanted to focus on avoiding that and avoid having that happen ever again.
Okay. Well, speaking of kind of that balance and how do you spend time in the lab versus other things, I know you have been very active in the community. You have participated in all sorts of leadership opportunities there. How do you manage and how do you choose the balance between opportunities to be public front of the house, you know, leading various groups on podcast, video, et cetera. Admittedly, some of that I make you do, so I might be the guilty party here. How do you balance those seeming extracurriculars, that sort of publication promotion piece, with that lab time tech piece? Because you're a technical guy. Like, how do you bring that into balance? How do you navigate that?
I would say 6 months ago, I'd have been the worst person in the world to ask that question of, because I was not well balanced. I just was not doing well with balance on that. What I found after kind of stepping back and doing less is that the external stuff really for me is an outlet for honing skills that I may not necessarily get to hone in my regular job. Like, for instance, right now, I'm working on honing skills on writing, because I think my writing has, you know, need for improvement. You know, yes, I've contributed to a couple of books, but that doesn't necessarily make me a good writer for publication, you know, on a, you know, company blog or something like that, right? And then also focusing on kind of my scripting and programming, because I've kind of gotten behind. You'll see probably in the upcoming months a lot more stuff for me on GitHub, and I know that will make Matt happy. You know, I'm spending time doing things like that. I've transitioned from just doing everything I can to enable everybody to doing more things that are going to enable me to take whatever my next step in my career might be. And that's kind of how I focus on that. And by having all those cards out and knowing where you want to be and the potential paths and the skill sets that you think are going to be required, it makes it a lot easier to choose which things you do. And as far as balance goes, you know, if you invest a lot of time in that, what is the counterbalance to that? What are you going to get on the other end of it? Because time is a commodity that you can't buy more of. And so everything I do, I kind of weigh against time.
Well, in fact, you had raised your hand a lot, and you were involved with a lot of activities, and you wrote a blog post and said, hey, I'm consciously stepping back. Was that a big step to go kind of public with, oh, hey, wait a minute, I'm stretched too thin?
Yeah, that all started actually with someone asking me, you know, how do you do it? You know, like, how do you get support from your family for that? And my wife and I had a conversation when I was at Cisco and saying, hey, you know, I really think I should take a year, focus on writing, raising my hand, getting noticed where I can, demonstrating these skills, you know, that I think I have, or, you know, at least finding people that can help me improve those skills, and raising my hand and getting involved. I was very fortunate that people like Amy noticed me and gave me more and more opportunities to, you know, improve myself. But what had ended up happening is I raised my hand so much that after 3 years, that's 3 years into a one-year experiment, I had kind of gotten overloaded. And I was, you know, so involved with so many different things that I no longer felt like I was properly contributing, and it was just stressful. And you know, I think I was very fortunate that I have had a lot of life events coming up at the end, you know, the last quarter of 2014 with moving to a new house, my wife being pregnant. You know, we just welcomed our new baby girl last week. And so I had a lot of things going on that I needed to be able to focus on. Between that and realizing how overloaded I was, you know, it's time to step back and, you know, let some of this stuff take care of itself for a little while so I can refocus at home.
You know, I want to spend a moment on that, gang, because I think while we often talk about raising your hand to be the type of person that, you know, makes opportunities, and we will certainly make heroes of those brave members, I don't think we've ever scratched the surface of how hard it is to know when to take a step back and let somebody else take the stage for a while. So I just wanted to kind of echo that. That's a tough conversation, and I admire, and what I'm hearing most of this conversation is that, Josh, you kind of take the time to think about how this affects a balanced lifestyle, or at least a sense of one in the long run.
Yeah, and that's just it, right? The interesting thing when you think about balance with your career is the balance isn't necessarily short term, right? Short term losses on the scale can lead to long term gains and improved balance. You know, you just have to be realistic about that. You know, I'm not looking to get myself into a role where I'm traveling 100% of the time and just never away, you know, never around the family and things like that. I am looking to get myself into, you know, a leadership position someday. But even then, we're already having conversations, my wife and I, about what that means. Like, what do we want that to look like? And that way, whenever opportunities start to arise, we can either qualify or disqualify them very quickly together. Right. And sometimes something might come up where I'm going to push hard and say, you know what, give me a year. We're going to do this. And this is why. And I think it'll be good. Or, you know, we'll stick with what's going on and wait for something else. It's kind of fun. But the communication aspect is really important. I won't lie. When I made the decision that I was going to step away from raising my hand and leading community efforts, I called my wife and I was in tears. Like it really affected me. It still does a little bit, much less now, but she was really supportive. She's like, you know what? From what I can tell, everything you did was really appreciated, and you got a lot of people that had your back and, you know, have supported you. So, you know, you deserve some time off. And I think she was right, and I'm really glad I did it. The interesting part about it, a couple of weeks later, I was already thinking about the things I might do next. Yeah, I'm almost like a serial entrepreneur when it comes to, you know, my career and community and the things that I'm doing. So I have some plans, but I'm sitting on them for right now.
I like it.
Enjoy the time, Josh. Yeah, I'm sure you will fill it in no time, but I think you hit it so well when you said that time's the only commodity you can't purchase.
Yeah, it's an absolute fact. I mean, the next 3 to 6 months are going to be solely focused on doing a really good job for Solid Fire and, you know, taking care of my family. You know, little baby needs a lot more than older kids, and, you know, getting a good steady state in our new home. And one thing that has been really interesting for me is that when I look at what I'm going to be doing next and projects that I want to work on and skills I want to hone for the future to get me to where I think, you know, my next level should be, it's nothing like what I've been doing. I mean, there's some overlap as far as skills go, but I intend on going into some uncharted territory and doing things that I haven't really done before, or I've maybe done a little bit and I didn't think I did well, but I think are going to be really, really important. And it's scary. Right. It's tough, but that's why I like, you know, you had brought up, how do you choose the things you raise your hand for outside of your core job or even within your company? It's those things that you can raise your hand for that have low risk, but high reward with, as far as, you know, skills development and personal and professional development.
Here at the Geek Whisperers, we spend a lot of time shining a lot of attention on using social media and being part of the community and doing all these extracurricular projects and raising your hand and just going out and doing stuff and saying yes. And you know, that's not always appropriate, or there's times in your life when you don't do, when you can't do all that, right? Like we just talked about. And you haven't disappeared from social media. You still have a big network across the industry. You show up at events, you're on this podcast, but you're not raising your hand as much. You're not necessarily blogging as much about as many different things, because you're focusing more, you know, you said you're retrenching on some technical stuff. I don't know. I think that's important, Amy, Matt, that we sometimes by celebrating all this blogging and social mediaing and being, you know, up on stage, have we overemphasized that? Because at certain parts of your career, you got to knuckle down and look at a spreadsheet or whatever.
No, I think it's really true. And something I've become very interested in lately is just asking people their balance in terms of raw lab time. You know, how do you stay really engaged with the technology versus, you know, projection? So output versus taking things in. I took a content break. I took a consumption break where I did nothing but consume instead of produce, which is, it's slightly different than lab time because I'm not an engineer, but I really appreciate that balance. In some ways it felt like going back to roots, you know, doing something different, but that would have a positive impact long-term. Josh's story, I have to say, is pretty inspiring there too. If you have a fear, I certainly do, and I'm probably a lot of people do, that if you just stop and take time for yourself, then you disappear and people forget. But to your point, Josh still has vibrant community. I'm still planning on torturing him and asking him to do stuff. But I expect him to say no sometimes, and that'll be fine. It's not going to make me not ask anymore. So from that story, I sort of derive you can not raise your hand and say yes every single time. You can keep it in balance. You can take breaks. You can rejuvenate. And it will be okay.
Yeah, it's a good change of pace for us. I think, as we were mentioning before, we make heroes of the brave. We teach people how to raise their hand and then how to talk about it in a way to add value to their business. That was our whole first year, was focused on how that's such a big part of the business model. But as we talk to individuals and we talk about career growth and what that means, it's good to get back to the fact that, like, these are real lives, and like, we all have to do this ourselves too. Of sometimes we need to just shut up and get down to the spreadsheet, and sometimes we need to cut back to only exactly what is most important and nothing more, so that we can have time for the other parts of our lives.
Well, one thing that's important for people to remember is that, and you know, I see this forgotten often, you are the CEO of your own life and your own career. You know, if you treat your life and your career with the same sense of urgency and respect that most people tend to have for their employment, because they like their mortgages getting paid, if you look at it in that framework, as a CEO, you have to look at every decision you make, every minute you spend. You know, maybe not that granular, but you know, how you spend your time, you have to make sure that you're meeting something that is productive. You know, and, you know, I mentioned earlier that I have a list of things that I absolutely will not do. And one of them is working a job where I feel like I'm just consistently spinning my wheels. Like I'm working hard and you know, it doesn't really make any impact, right? If I feel like I'm in a role where I'm working hard and making no impact, I need another role, because that is time lost in my frame of mind, unless I'm just developing like tremendous skills that are just going to let me accelerate my career.
No, I like it. No, when to say yes. It's an interesting case. Like you said, we did spend a lot of time encouraging people who weren't saying yes ever. And it's a great sort of counterbalance to say, okay, you said yes to everything, and then you had to bring it a little bit back into balance to make sure you were navigating your path correctly.
I'll give you some credit on this one, Amy. You know, when you first approached me with Roving Reporter, I was keen to do it, and I felt confident that I could do a good job. But at the same time, I was like, I've never really done something like this before. What if I am the Jimmy Fallon of technical interviews, and it's a lot of fun, but it's slightly awkward.
I'd watch.
Yeah, I mean, you're still going to watch, but at some point you're like, yeah, he'll get better.
He'll get better. So, a little context. This was being a roving reporter at a conference.
Cisco, under Amy's guidance, has had a roving reporter program where at various conferences, Cisco Lives and VMworlds and the like, they have someone that goes around and interviews various people, customers, partners, engineers, and essentially goes out and finds interesting stories about things that are happening at the conference. I think my first outing as roving reporter at VMworld 2012, I did 42 interviews, and I think a third of those were, or maybe half of those were done with like an actual film crew, and half of them were just done with me and a phone going out and talking to people and just kind of finding out the things that were going on. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's just a little marketing side note of basically at all tier one tech conferences, my formula is if it's the show we're throwing, then you bring somebody outside in. And if it's a show we're attending that's someone else's show, you use one of your in-house unicorns. And it's basically to counterbalance. I think at those events, you end up seeing a lot of talking head video, a lot of high-level video, a lot of sort of celebrity video. It's to, you know, power to the people, sort of embedded reporter concept of really, you know, no rules, just a camera and somebody who's interested, and they share the conference from their view.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. I treated it as, you know, whoever's watching this really wants to be here and couldn't be here, so let me go find the things that was interesting and share that with them.
And I have to say, it's got quite a legacy. Every single person who was roving reporter got a new job like within months after being roving reporter. So I don't know if what that says. I'll let everybody decide what the causality and the correlative evidence is. I'm sure Matt will disagree with whatever conclusion I draw.
Well, I'll drop the conclusion. It's precisely what I had commented on earlier. Evidence of a skill set and a capability that you're not going to get doing your day-to-day job. You know, it's an opportunity to raise your hand, do something, and you know, pick up a skill or demonstrate a skill or a willingness to do something like that that gets observed by other people, right? I hit a point at some point in my career where people would want to interview me, and they're like, well, we don't need to talk technical, right? You're good. Right, we're not concerned about whether or not you're technical enough. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, I don't think I'm technical enough for this job. I think some of this crap's going to go over my head. Like, I'll understand it, but it might take me a while. Actually, coming to SolidFire, I even told the hiring manager, I said, you know, I haven't touched some of these technologies in a long time. I've been out in the field selling, so, and they've changed a lot. So there's going to be some learning curve on some of those things. And he's like, yeah, I'm not worried about it. You'll pick it up faster than most, and you'll be okay. I'm like, well, that's great confidence, so yay.
You have a vibe. They just know. Hey, so Amy, often we've been talking to people who are the people who get chosen about the jobs they get and things like that. You somehow, what was it about Josh that you thought he would be a good reporter? So if somebody is inside an organization and thinking about raising their hand, what qualities did you see in Josh that you thought, oh, this would work?
Oh, that's a really great question, and also for people who are trying to figure out who to put on camera, you can screen test people a little bit. You can observe them. I know everybody. I feel like people should cover their ears because I'm such a terrible stalker. I watch as much as people think I yakety yak all the time, and of course we're yakety yakking here on the podcast. I'm a real listener, and I go and learn at all these conferences by listening to people explain things. And so some of it was listening to people ask questions and watching Josh respond to them and seeing how he engaged people. And you can guess almost every time how that's going to convey on camera, because when people are drawn to someone, you're right, it's just a natural energy. I've often said, and how we set the Cisco Champion program up is we were looking for people who couldn't help themselves. They had to share what they knew. And they end up being the people that people go to ask for favors, to ask questions. It conveys. So if you're thinking about raising your hand, think about, well, how do you like to share information? Because there's no, you know, one right way. People share in different ways. Maybe you really do prefer the written word, then start a blog if you haven't. If you prefer, you know, you've got a great voice, but you don't like being on camera, if that makes you nervous, then be a podcaster. If you don't mind, if you can sort of not think about it and just go out there and do it, then video is a great outlet. You just kind of have to forget the camera's there and just be yourself. So take the chance. I think, like Josh is saying, if you don't try some of these things out, you'll never know. And it's surprising. It's not always, I've seen people really come out of their shell in front of the camera, which sounds funny. You think you hear all about stage fright, but it can honestly often go the other direction, because when you just give somebody a camera and the mission to go and be find interesting people, it's not about them anymore. And very few engineers I've ever challenged with that have come away empty handed. They end up going and finding the most interesting guests, having the most interesting conversations, because they've got a mission. And it gives them, I don't know, it gives you a whole different way to attend a conference. You've been an attendee, you've been a speaker, but have you ever in your life been a reporter? Or I don't know, it's interesting. And I think all of us can kind of, I go in every event like that, to be honest. Again, running off on a side note there, because I think the company has paid for me to be there. Not everybody gets to do that. And I'm really committed to sharing what I find there with everybody else.
Yeah, and one thing I'd add to that proved interesting for me, you'll know I had said that I had one of my retirement goals was to do voice narration, like audiobook narration and things like that. My doing Roving Reporter and then doing V Brownback podcast and then getting involved with some other things, I realized I really enjoy talking on podcasts and talking with people and having conversations. And I've been told that I don't have a wholly unpleasant voice and I enjoy doing it. And I'm like, you know, I think I'd like to do this, you know, as a hobby. And that had not existed prior to, you know, raising my hand and doing some of these things. So, you know, the interesting part, you know, and we started out talking about, you know, agility and, you know, having an agile career. The thing I like about the index cards is you get something new, write it down and add it to the stack, right? And it makes it tangible. And you know, doing some of these things fundamentally changed how I think I want to spend the time the rest of my life.
Well, I have to tell one other small inside baseball story, Josh, which is the other reason I knew Josh would be good on camera is I ran a food blog for several years, and I did a bacon brackets. So just like you have March Madness, we had Bacon Madness, because I wanted to know the best kind of bacon. This was sort of before the whole bacon thing started.
Yeah, that was fun.
And I just had a little flip camera, and I needed a judge, and I was like, hey, Josh, can you taste some bacon? And, you know, blind taste. And brought into the Cisco cafeteria these two types of bacon, and he had to choose the winner because I was biased. I knew which one was which. And to be honest, so when people ask about, you know, how did all of this get started, that kind of was the beginning of V-Bacon, because there was a meetup going on and Josh took the bacon right on into the meetup afterward. And people were like, I cannot believe there's bacon at this meetup. And kind of from that was the beginning.
Humble roots.
Well, the crazy part about that is I've always told people running user groups, show up with cookies. Everybody loves cookies, right? You have cookies, they'll stick around. And Amy proved that bacon was more powerful.
Hey, they're both pretty good. Josh, going back to goals, I noticed that on your LinkedIn profile, you have in your headline that you are an aspiring CTO. When I saw that, it's been a while now, and you've had it there for a while, I was actually going to give you some private feedback that I don't know if that's a great idea. I've never seen that done before. So instead, I'll just do it on the podcast. In the context of, you know, setting goals and that, you know, that's one of your possible outcomes that's at the top of your pyramid. Have you gotten any feedback on that? Has anybody commented that you have aspiring CTO in your LinkedIn profile?
I've had mixed feedback on that. First feedback I got was when I had things that said helping people with things that start with V. I got a lot more feedback on that one.
I know what that means.
Yeah. No, it was virtual, but yeah. The aspiring CTO, that was really for me, right? And it was one of those that...
It's kind of brave.
Well, you know, I'm trying to remember where I read it or where I picked it up, but I have a quote, and I put it in one of my blog posts, Turning Dreams to Goals. And essentially it says, until you write it down, it's not really a goal. It's just something that you envision in your head. And right after I read that, I put that on my LinkedIn profile, because what it really did for me was every time somebody goes to my LinkedIn profile and they look at the things that I've done, I'm hoping that they'll see that and look at what I'm doing and will let me know if I'm doing a good job or not, if I'm on the right path. Because frankly, I'm not always sure. I feel like I'm doing a good job, and I feel like I'm doing that. And the funny thing is if I never become a CTO, I'm not really worried about it, right? It's just, you know, the things that CTOs do are the types of things that I'm interested in and that I think I would really enjoy doing, you know, further in my career. The biggest thing as far as feedback goes has been people who say, hey, you know, if you ever need a mentor or you ever want to talk about, you know, what you're doing and where you're going, I'm here. And I, you know, that's
not a bad outcome at all.
That's an amazing outcome.
That is a great outcome. And in fact, you know, if there's one piece of advice outside of, you know, setting your goals and where you think you want to be, biggest advice I can give anybody is find a mentor. Find somebody who is there or who you think has those skills. And again, jobs are cool, but there are jobs out there you've never heard of that you don't even know exist. Focus on the skill sets and the type of person who does work that you think is interesting, and see if they'll be your mentor. You know, I have a couple of people who are CTOs who have provided mentorship. And that has been really valuable for me. And it also helps me think, like, you know, I'm in the role I am in now, and I kind of have a track record of changing jobs every time I run out of business cards. It's not intentional, but that just seems to be what my wife noted that one time.
Very practical.
Yeah. So right when it's time to reorder, I'm like, you know, maybe I should think about whether I should reorder these or not. Actually, now that I think about it, that's great advice, folks. When you get close to time to reorder your business cards, think about, you know, what you want on that business card. Is it what you're doing, or is it something else? You know, I have no interest in really changing. I'm actually hoping that I'll be really successful what I'm doing at SolidFire, and they'll realize that I'd be good for something that I don't even know exists, and peg me for that. Yeah, I kind of keep it open like that.
Well, as we start to wrap up here, I have to ask my favorite question as my glass half empty self, which is, if you had one piece of advice for folks, everything's been very positive, and I know you're a very positive person, but if you had to tell them never, ever, ever do this again, what would it be?
Ooh. So something I've done that they should never, ever, ever do again?
Just, yeah, something you've learned the hard way. Those are the valuable lessons.
Yeah, don't put your MySpace profile on your resume. I'm kidding.
Mine is don't leave your phone unlocked near Josh.
That's a very good one. I would think first and foremost is don't assume that where you are is where you have to be. I spent a lot of years not fully appreciating that I had transferable skills and that my experiences would be valuable to somebody else, because I just did not have any visibility into the broader world, right? I just didn't know that the things that I had worked on were really important to companies. I was like, oh, well, that's awesome. I can totally do that. I would think that's it. You know, just don't look, think beyond, you know, what you know. And finding people who can mentor you is really important in that regard, because generally they have a lot more experience than you. They've seen a lot more than you, and, you know, they can kind of help guide you You know, I'll throw out a, I won't say his name because I don't want everybody calling him. But right before I made the switch over to VCE, I was talking with one of my mentors, and he was telling me, he's like, you know, you have to be realistic. He goes, because you could do this, this, or this. I'm like, wait, what was that last one? Right? I had no idea what he was talking about. It was a type of role that I never heard of. And guess what? I'm essentially doing it. So it was interesting how that transpired. So that would be it. You know, keep an open mind.
I love it. Well, with that, where can people find you, Josh, if they want to follow up and read some more of your tips on all things work, technology, et cetera?
You will find me up at 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. changing diapers. But on social on social media, you can find me at Josh_Atwell. I currently co-host the VUPaaS podcast, which is a virtualization user podcast as a service. And I blog at vtesseract.com.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate your time. And I'll be signing off to endorse you for diaper changing on LinkedIn momentarily.
You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as J. Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.
And I normally go second.
I panicked.
No, that was my fault. I just like made you wait for it. I'm like, wait. Yeah, no, that's my turn. Oh, John's talking. Whoops.